Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Good morning, Wichita. Let's talk to Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Hello, Matt.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I've grown tired of arguing with people about the game on Sunday night, though, so I don't want to do any of that.
There's no reason to argue.
Yeah. Well, there's
just move on.
Several reasons to argue, but I'm not going to anymore.
I'm ready to argue some
more. I've moved on. This 24-hour rule.
Exactly.
Moved on. And now I'm ready to look ahead to the Chargers. But first, I must ask you, why does Juan Thornhill only play 11 snaps in a game? So.
Apparently, according to Andy Reid, because Dan Sorensen is more consistent and had a better training camp.
So you don't sound like you buy that.
I mean, Andy Reid's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. And Steve Spagnuolo, too. So
I hope they don't forget any more football, though, because that bothers me.
Something.
Keep forgetting stuff.
Even after they've forgotten all that stuff, they still know more about football than I do.
All right.
So I'll give the benefit of the doubt, but they got to see something that I'm not seeing. Because, Thornhill looks, he looks pretty close to where he was as a rookie. And as a rookie, played 90% of the snaps. I mean, he was a starter. He played third most snaps in the defense. I don't see what more else he has to do to get back in there consistently. But for whatever reason, the Chiefs feel like Dan Sorensen is a better safety at this point. I don't see it, but like I said, those guys are apparently smarter than I am. So,
okay, let's have a difficult conversation, because I find Sorensen to be one of the more polarizing figures on this football team, because there's just not a whole lot in between. People either love him or they just don't want to see him play hardly, very much. As much as he does, at least. Okay, so he made some gigantic plays in the Chiefs Super Bowl run. And he's come up with big plays in the regular season, too. What sealed the game, the interception, right, in the game in Mexico City?
Against the Chargers.
Yep. Big interception against the Raiders to put that away. He had a sack the other night. He has made some gigantic plays that fans of this football team will never forget. But then also, many times within the same game, you see him, and he'll get abused in coverage, and he appears to be somewhat of a liability and a target for the opposition to go after in the passing game. And then sometimes it comes back to bite him because then he makes a big play. But, you know, to have him out there for, I don't feel like he's a guy that you want out there every single snap like they had him out there on Sunday night. And also, Thornhill, I felt like they needed something different. They needed to try something different. And I don't know, you could make the argument that they may not win that game against Cleveland without Thornhill. He forced that fumble, came up with a big pass breakup. He made a couple of really big plays. And two, when you have Sorensen and Neiman together on the field so much, I mean, I feel like they should get some royalties for some of the highlights that Lamar Jackson's going to have on his season-ending tape. Because it just made him look bad a few times. And again, Neiman makes some plays every now and again. But I feel like once Willie Gay comes back, then you're not going to see as much Neiman at all. So that's they're forced to do that. But Thornhill's not hurt. Thornhill's healthy, ready to play in only 11 snaps. And so what is Dan Sorensen to you? How would you describe him as a player? Because it's really all over the map depending on what Chiefs fan you ask.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I think that the criticism of Dan Sorensen to me has always been that the Chiefs have just simply asked him to do more than he's probably capable of doing. And that's no knock. I mean, you know, every player is who they are. I think Dan Sorensen, you know, would be probably the best number three safety in the league. It's just when you ask him to be more than that, that some of his liabilities get exposed. When Dan Sorensen's playing a more limited role and you can use him specifically in all the things that he's good at, which, you know, hey, as a kind of a dime linebacker, he's really good at that. You ask him to match up against some tight ends, he's really good at that. It's when you ask him to be more than that, when you ask him to, you know, be a single high guy deep, doesn't have the speed for that. When you ask him to cover some wide receivers, doesn't have the speed for that. You ask him to do some things that are out of his comfort zone, things that are above his skill set, and that's when the, you know, he does start to get exposed. I mean, to me, if Dan Sorensen were playing the amount of snaps that Juan Thornhill is doing, he'd be one of the most popular guys on the team because he'd be making plays. I think he'd be fresher. He'd probably be maybe a step quicker, considering that he would be getting a little bit of rest here and there. At this point in his career, I think that's probably exactly the role. For whatever reason, you know, the Chiefs feel that they need more of Dan Sorensen. And like I said, I don't see it. I mean, I'm with everybody else. I really want to see more of Juan Thornhill. I think if Juan Thornhill is certainly more of the future of this defense than Dan Sorensen is, and Dan Sorensen as the number three guy would be perfect. But there's something in the consistency that they see, or the inconsistency in Juan Thornhill. And that's one thing that the Chiefs, you know, under Steve Spagnuolo particularly, and even a little bit of Bob Sutton as well, Chiefs have favored consistency in and out over a lot of other traits, which is why you see a lot of Ben Neiman. It's why you see a lot of Dan Sorensen. Not always going to be making the athletic plays, but they trust those guys to be where they're supposed to be, to know the defense inside and out, and to be consistent. And for whatever reason, I feel like that Juan Thornhill's not that guy right now.
Whose fault was the blown coverage on the jump pass to Hollywood Brown?
I mean, it looked to me like it was probably Traverse Ward. I mean, you know, Tyrann Mathieu took the blame for it as the leader of the defense, but I'm not sure that I believe that. I think he was just doing the right thing. It looked like Ward thought that he was going to have help behind him, and he didn't. And that's probably where the play broke down. I mean, if it's going to be either Traverse Ward or Tyrann Mathieu that you're blaming the play on, probably think it's going to be Ward. And Mathieu, if you looked at least at his reaction on the field, he certainly looked like somebody wasn't in the right place.
So let's continue this uncomfortable conversation, but from the other side. And you touched on it a little bit, Matt, because we focus on why is Sorensen playing so much. But should we be focusing on why isn't Juan Thornhill playing more? Is this, should we be concerned that, I mean, because, look, the Chiefs have the motivation, you would think, to want to play a guy who is, they've invested highly in the draft on, right? Like, you don't usually it would be the type of thing where it's like, boy, they drafted this guy, so they're forcing him into the lineup, and he's not producing. Like, they've invested in him, and they're still choosing not to play him. And so, I mean, does that mean there's a red flag? They clearly, I look at this and say, they clearly don't like something about the way he's approaching his job. Is that an unfair assumption from my standpoint?
I don't think it is an unfair assumption, because it's been fairly consistent even with the language that the Chiefs have used.
Right.
I mean, you know, the fact that they were continually basically calling him out for, you know, playing scared. I mean, that's flat out exactly basically what they were saying that Juan Thornhill was doing, that, you know, that he didn't have his confidence there. And if you read between the lines, I mean, that's kind of what they were saying, is just that since the knee injury, he hadn't been going full out, that maybe he was holding back a little bit, and that they needed him to build up his confidence. Well, I mean, I see a guy that looks like he's playing pretty confident out there right now. And so I don't get it. I mean, he's certainly more athletic. And you look at that Ravens game. You know, this is coming off a game where he played, 56 snaps, I think, against Cleveland. And it goes down to 11 against the Ravens. And they were favoring a lot more. Even when they were going to nickel, they were using mostly a three-corner look. They played a lot more base. So, you know, they did play a fair amount of regular 4-3 with three linebackers out there. But this game seemed to be just crying out for a third safety most of the time. Because I don't think that the coverage issues were such that they needed to, you know, especially with the Ravens receivers where they are right now, I don't know that they really needed to have three corners out there as much as they did, as much as they needed somebody out there, you know, to spy on Lamar Jackson. Because I'm not sure who was spying on Lamar Jackson, because it looked like nobody was.
Matt Derrick is our guest. All right, Matt. As I said, we'll try to look forward to the Chargers game after we just spent 10 minutes complaining about what happened against the Ravens. Let's take another swing. My fault. So Willie Gay Jr., when he comes back, you have to expect that he's going to help, but they're not going to have him back for this game. And if you're the Chargers, even though they don't run the ball as effectively as the Browns or the Ravens, don't you have to go into this game with the idea that we are going to try to run the hell out of the football until the Chiefs prove that they can stop it? Don't you have to do that if you're any football team right now?
Yeah, I think you at least have to give it the old college try. I mean, you know, and the Chargers coming off a game where obviously didn't run the football that much. I mean, Austin Eckler, 9 carries, 54 yards. I mean, he was fairly productive. But I think you have to. I mean, you know, even if it's just a little bit of lip service, just give the ball to these guys and see what happens. I mean, the Chargers are who they are. And clearly at this point, their identity is Justin Herbert. I mean, and that's their future. So they're gonna sling the football a little bit. But you're right. I mean, you've got to adapt to your opponent. And you saw that the Ravens did that finally. The Ravens finally adjusted so that they weren't blitzing Patrick Mahomes all day. Chargers got to do the same thing. I mean, you see a team that's giving up over 200 yards a game so far. I think you got to take some shots on the ground and see what's there, at least in the first half, see how it goes. I mean, you can always make adjustments in the second half and then put the game in Herbert's hands. But I see no downside if you're the Chargers of running the football a little bit and see what happens.
And Herbert can run the ball a little bit himself, too, right? I remember he had a rushing touchdown against the Chiefs in the first game of the season. In both games, actually, against the Chiefs, he had a rushing touchdown. He's not like Lamar Jackson, but I don't know. That makes him dangerous, too. What about the Chargers on defense, by the way? How much better do you think they are in that regard this year?
I mean, to me, I think it's still a little bit of the jury's out. I mean, they at least look somewhat healthy for the first time in a while, which is something that I can't say about the Chargers all that much, but they got Joey Bosa, they got Derwin James. I mean, those are two playmakers. They look like they're at least, you know, generating a little bit of pass rush. That could be a problem for the Chiefs. I mean, you know, even though I think that the offensive line has been holding up pretty well as far as the pass rush goes. To me, I mean, I think the Chiefs need to try and find a way to run the football. I mean, this is a team that they have run the ball well against effectively in the past. And, you know, and they need to see that they're obviously going to be working on some fixes this week in the run game offensively. They need to test those out, too. And this is a team that I think that they at least can, you know, see if you can run the football against the Chargers. Because if this is a third straight week where you're not able to effectively run the football, then I think that we're really going to have to start looking at this offense as, okay, it's Patrick Mahomes or bust, because right now they're not getting anything out of the run game.
So, Chris Jones, the early returns were good against the Browns, but then, boy, did he look like a fish out of water against the Ravens. And a lot of that is just a bad matchup for him, and he didn't have the experience to perform well and against that unique rushing attack, and he didn't, and he was exploited. And so right now, are there red flags about this move to defensive end, or do you just chalk that up to, hey, the Ravens, that's the only team that's going to be able to exploit Chris Jones like that and use his aggressiveness against him, and moving forward it should be fine and no red flags? What do you take away from Chris Jones' performance?
Yeah, I kind of feel that category right there is that, hey, this is just a bad matchup for Chris Jones. Wait to see what happens in the long term. He did. He looked really uncomfortable trying to set the edge against the run, and that's to be understood because he hasn't had to do that very often. And certainly against a quarterback like Jackson, I mean, Chris Jones is athletic, but he doesn't have Lamar Jackson's speed. So this probably, under all other circumstances, probably would have been a good game if the Chiefs were true to their kind of words of, hey, we're going to line up Chris Jones wherever we think is the most effective matchup. This probably would have been a better game for him to be playing a lot more inside. But I can also see why that they were relishing maybe the opportunity to put him out on the edge, because, you know, the Ravens were playing basically a couple of backup tackles out of position, and they saw kind of an opportunity to get Jones on the edge and maybe make some plays. But it's a bad matchup. I mean, he's not going to be able to keep up Lamar Jackson. Probably would have been more effective for him being on the inside, you know, collapsing the pocket that way. Because honestly, it didn't look like Lamar Jackson was under any pressure all night long. I mean, most of those runs that he had were all designed quarterback runs. Not a lot of scrambles. I mean, Chiefs didn't force him to do anything. And conversely, I mean, you know, one of the reasons why the Chiefs have been successful against the Ravens in the past had been that they had collapsed the pocket and made it so that there weren't any place for Jackson to go, either on a scramble or a quarterback run. And, you know, and they did it with, you know, Alex Okafor's been on the edge. I mean, they've had some other guys out there that are more effective edge run setters. So, yeah, I mean, this seems like it probably would have been a better opportunity to kick Jones inside a bit more and utilize some other guys. But to me, I mean, I still think long term, if you look at who are the best edge rushers on this team, I think Chris Jones is one of the two.
Let's talk about some of the snap counts coming out of that game against the Ravens and what we'd like to see moving forward. Okay, so, for example, we all agree we want more snaps for Juan Thornhill, and those snaps would come from Dan Sorensen, correct?
Pretty much. Okay. I mean, yeah, maybe one of the linebackers, maybe Vid Neiman a little bit too. But, yeah, I mean, ideally, I think, you know, Juan Thornhill's given you 90% of the snaps, and Dan Sorensen's probably more like 50 or 60.
Okay, Mike Hughes, why only 22 snaps for Hughes?
Yeah, that was, I mean, some of it was that they were playing a little bit less sub packages, but they also put Rashad Fenton out there for a couple of series. So hard to see if that's just the case that at this point that they weren't happy with some of the performance they were getting from Hughes. Maybe it was just simply that they wanted to get Fenton some work after he didn't play any defensive snaps against the Ravens, which kind of surprised me. Let's see what happens going forward. But, I mean, those two guys were actually, I thought, pretty close during camp. So, to a degree, maybe it makes sense that they're kind of sharing that number three spot. But I was kind of surprised, at least what we saw after the Ravens at the Browns game, that Fenton saw a lot more playing time.
I want more snaps for Turk Wharton. I was surprised he only had 22 snaps in that game. Especially, you know, what they were putting out there wasn't working.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I mean, you go back to, I think, trying to collapse the pocket a little bit and make sure that there weren't any holes for Jackson to run through, and the other guys weren't getting it done. So, yeah, to me, it is surprising that Wharton was getting that kind of workload, especially that, you know, he's getting fewer snaps than Colin Saunders, because at this point I think Wharton is still a better option than Saunders. Even though Saunders is playing really well, still think Wharton's got to be your better option there.
So as Jake pointed out earlier, that, I mean, defense is obviously the worry here. There's not too much to be worried about the offense, but there are two guys I would like to see get more snaps. Jerick McKinnon had four snaps offensively. One of them was a nice catch and picked up some good yardage after the catch. Do you think McKinnon will get more snaps? And if he does, and if you'd like him to see get more snaps, he should come at the expense of who?
Yeah, I definitely think he needs some more snaps. And honestly, I think it probably needs to come at the expense of both the guys in front of him. I mean, Clyde hasn't been setting the world on fire, and maybe some of that is still getting used to the line in front of him and everything. But he played 65% of the snaps. I mean, that's an okay level, but I'd be fine with him at 50%. Darrell Williams was at 14 snaps, and if he's just mostly playing as your third down guy, I mean, I think that's fine. So to me, I mean, taking a few snaps from both those guys, thought it was, you know, I mean, McKinnon's a guy you can line up anywhere. I mean, you saw it against the Ravens. I think that catch that he had, he was split out wide. They do like to move him around. He can do a lot of those things, a lot of pre-snap motion. I mean, there's so much that Jerick McKinnon can do, even without the football, that I think would keep defenses a little bit off guard. So I thought this was a guy that was potential for maybe, you know, 4 to 6 touches a game. And I think he's getting 0.5 right now. So to me, yeah, I need to see McKinnon getting at least maybe 15, 20 snaps a game offensively.
I'm with you. I'd love to see him on third down. I think he's a good it's a bad matchup for opposing defenses, and I think he could the Chiefs could exploit that, especially on third down. Nate Bucchetti, I'll let you bring up the next guy, you know who I'm talking about, the wide receiver that only got 11 snaps and also found the end zone, one of the biggest plays of the game.
Yeah, once you pop, you can't stop.
That's right.
Byron Pringle, should he be playing more?
To me, he should. I mean, he's been for snap basis and based on routes. I mean, he's been really, to me, I mean, second most productive receiver on this team so far this season. He's been getting a few opportunities, but making the most of them. And on top of that, I mean, I think he's the most physical guy of that group, the guy who can do some of the dirty work that you need to get done. I mean, you know, Pringle, I know he gets a lot of comparisons for being maybe, you know, it should be that kind of X guy and that he's got some size and everything. And so, you know, sometimes there's a, hey, you know what, he can do some of the Sammy Watkins stuff. To me, I'm going to compare him to a guy who's actually a little bit smaller than he is. I'm going to compare him to Albert Wilson. I mean, to me, that's the kind of role that I think he could play, because Wilson was the guy that you could trust in any of those roles. You could trust him to, you know, run some of those rub routes to get other guys free. You could trust him to run, over the middle. He was tough. Pringle's tough, too. I mean, he can take some pot hits. He can take some pops. You need somebody that can, you know, go down the field. He can do that, too. I mean, to me, Pringle fills that role. I mean, he can, to me, he can play any of those spots. He can do a lot of the dirty work. I need to see more of him, and I'm kind of surprised at this point that he's still running so far behind. You know, Hardman I can understand, but DeMarcus Robinson getting 30 snaps and Byron Pringle 11, I think that needs to change.
Okay, before we get your official prediction for Chiefs and Chargers, I wanted to ask you about the AFC West in general, since divisional play is the beginning for the Chiefs. I think that, and look, they still have a very good defense, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens when their level of opposition increases. But look, I feel like you can explain Denver away by, hey, they play the Giants and the Jags. They should be 2-0. The Chargers beat Washington and then lost to the Cowboys. I think anyone reasonable might say, yeah, look at those two games, they might split. I had the Raiders starting 0-2, seeing that they were going to play the Ravens and the Steelers. And so I must give credit where credit is due. The Raiders have looked much better than I thought. And that's I can't imagine anyone has a more impressive two wins to start the season than they do, beating the Ravens and the Steelers. And so I had them as the fourth best team in the West. Do we need to rethink? I know it's only 2 weeks and it's easy to overreact, but they did beat the Ravens and the Steelers. Do we need to rethink things? How do you rate the four teams in the AFC West now that you've had 2 weeks to watch?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Denver being 2-0 can kind of be explained by the schedule. It still wouldn't have been a surprise if they'd maybe drop that game to the Giants, but you know, Jacksonville's terrible, so at least that kind of makes sense, them being 2-0 at this point. And Teddy Bridgewater's been playing pretty well. So, you know, he hasn't been turning over the football. He's been productive, and that's going to help. I mean, because the Broncos are still a little bit defense-driven, so if they can get a pretty good, decent quarterback play, they can be a .500 team. The Raiders, to me, it's not only just that they are 2-0, but the way that they got there. Because Derek Carr is playing really well. And these weapons around him are making big plays downfield. I mean, this is the team you're starting to see as, you know, the AFC West, everybody's gone out and tried to get weapons. Everybody's trying to keep up with the Chiefs because they've realized more than anybody else, you can't win at the defensive slugfest with the Chiefs. You're going to have to be able to outscore them at times. And the Raiders are moving the football. I mean, they're playing really well. Guys like Ruggs are coming along and making plays downfield. Darren Waller's are still a heck of a tight end. I mean, to me, it's the fact that they're developing well on offense. I mean, I'm still not sold on this Raiders defense. I think that's what's eventually going to let them down. But you look at the schedule, and after those first two games against the Ravens and the Steelers, it gets a lot easier for the Raiders for a while. They've got the Dolphins, now we're in a mess with the quarterback situation, Chargers, Bears, Broncos, Eagles. I mean, that's a stretch before the bye week that, Raiders could be 6-1, 7-0 is certainly in the conversation before you get to the bye week. So to me, I think, I'm still not sold because I know that Derek Carr is eventually going to turn in some of those Derek Carr games, and I'm not sold on this defense, but they're certainly looking better than the 500 team that I thought they were at this point.
And see,
or a 9-8, 8-9 team as they should be.
They kind of won like a shootout, like you might expect from them to win games against the Ravens. But what surprised me, it was kind of a defensive slugfest with the Steelers. And they didn't have Josh Jacobs, what was their leading rusher, Peyton Barber. And again, I'll stick with what I said at the beginning. I think Roethlisberger is garbage at this point, and that the Steelers are going to have to be carried by their defense as long as that guy is still the quarterback. But the Raiders went in there and played in a Steelers kind of game. And they beat him at it. And that's I was far more impressed with that than what they did against the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens game didn't convince me of anything because I thought the both teams were pretty sloppy there. And it was real pretty all the time. But you're right. I mean, this was a more complete victory against the Steelers. And like I said, I mean, hey, there are still concerns. I mean, I'm with you on Roethlisberger. He's not what he used to be. But, hey, he goes for 295. They were able to contain the run game, so give them that. I'm just not convinced of this Raiders defense, but they got a couple of playmakers, and those guys have been making plays. I mean, and Perryman's been a really big addition. Maybe they can still surprise us, but I still feel like at some point the real Derek Carr is going to pop up occasionally, and that's what's probably going to cost him.
And it continues to piss me off. Melvin Ingram looked good again.
Yeah.
He looked good again, and I feel like, people were concerned about, not signing Juju Smith-Schuster, not signing these other guys. That's going to be the big, or I feel like it is right now, the big swing and a miss that the Chiefs could have landed Melvin Ingram. And the first two games, you look at his pressure rate, and, I mean, he could have helped this football team. He could have helped this football team, and I feel like that's going to be a big whiff that the Chiefs may end up regretting.
The Chiefs are betting that when it gets to December and January, that a guy like Jaren Reed's going to hold up a lot better than Melvin Ingram will. So that's going to be the question. I mean, I'm certainly expecting, 7 productive games from Ingram this year. It's questions, can he give you 17 or 20? And I think that's really what led the Chiefs, away from pursuing Ingram during the offseason.
Matt Derrick, tell people where they can read all your work, please.
You can go to ChiefsDigest.com, and I am the most active and obnoxious on Twitter, at Matt Derrick.
You get after it on Twitter. That's what I like. Thank you very much, Matt. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
That's Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Back after this on WHB.